So. Had a very interesting experience over the weekend at San Francisco Zen Center. They had what is called a mountain seat ceremony, where a new abbot is installed. And the metaphor is that he climbs the mountain of the institution and takes the whole thing on, the whole responsibility. It was a beautiful ceremony. Steve Stuckey is the one who climbed the mountain. A very, very wonderful man. He's been a part of our Bratz group, so I felt I had to be there, even though going to those big dues always makes me feel very shy. There were more brown robes than I've seen any place for a long time. We all gathered and had tea together in stand-up. It was like a cocktail party, only we were drinking tea. And everybody had a brown robe on. It was like a bunch of CEOs, only all in the same costume, but talking about their institutions and how they pay the mortgage and how they carry the insurance and all the problems that come and responsibilities with maintaining a large practice place. There are many of them in this country now, many, 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 and wonderful teachers in all of them. And I came away thinking, oh, how nice not to have to do that. Really came back appreciating just this simple situation. And the presence of Jikoji as a wonderful resource for us. We don't even have to climb a mountain. We're all holding it together. So we're on the fourth stage. These stages sound like what they tell us in childhood. Oh, you're just going through a stage. Through extraordinary effort, you seize the ox. Still, its will is forceful and its body spirited. Sometimes it runs high into the mountains, and other times it disappears into the mist. So what Daido says is this is describing a rudimentary understanding of true self. He talks about true self in here somewhat, a lot. And it's a very ambiguous concept, really. What is the true self? Capital T, capital S. As we sit, we become more familiar with ourself, with our conditioned self, the self that's been educated to know what it is. We're told from the very beginning, you're a boy, you're a girl, you're a good girl, you're a bad boy. You're a white, you're a black, you're a green, you're a yellow boy, girl. It's all very useful. We learn our language, and through our language, we learn to identify not only the world, but ourself. Our values are given to us, our identity, everything is conditioned. And if we disbelieve what we're told, we often get in trouble. it can be very painful. Because one of the processes of growing up is to begin to question and to begin to deeply look at what this, our situation is. And there's a kind of turning point that we come to over and over where we can choose whether to accept the conditioned teaching, the conditioned identity, or to refuse it by seeing something else or something more. How we see ourselves is essential to how we're able to be in the world. And it's vast. Often at a certain point, we just stop examining, stop asking, and just accept the way we accept that we have to brush our teeth in the morning. We accept that we're supposed to be a certain way at a certain age, that because we've had this much education or this kind of background, that we are this kind of people. We just become satisfied with what we've been given with no questions. So that the vast world of the self becomes closed to us in some ways. And that creates some suffering. So this rudimentary understanding is a kind of struggle with our conditioning. Is this true? Is it really true? Am I this kind of person? Is there a person? Person means mask. What's behind the mask? Dido says, it calls it becoming intimate with the whole body and mind. It's about how to accept what's all here. And it's a lifetime proposition. It's not just a stage that we get through either, though that's how this is presented. I think our whole life long we keep facing our foolishness, our limitations, our tremendous limitations, and become really closely acquainted with and accepting of what this is without trying to flaunt a kind of acceptable picture of ourself. It's a very interesting book by an anthropologist who wrote about presentation of the self in everyday life. And when you think about it that way, how it is that we dress to present ourselves, we speak, we cultivate habits to present what we think is me. To become intimate with what's underneath that. And to accept it with all its apparent flaws and foolishness. Ajo says, prajna comes and goes. It's inconsistent. We act stupidly, but our habits are changing as we sit. Prajna comes and goes. I would say awareness of prajna comes and goes. Prajna prajna is already. Wisdom is already. Buddha nature is already. But our awareness comes and goes. When we dependent on our habitual mind to carry us through, we're pretty closed up. Closed up not only to others, but to ourselves. It's contradictory in a way, because the own self that we're close to is the one that we how can I say, when we're drawing something or playing music, when we're totally absorbed in what we're doing, it's the doing that we're aware of, not ourself. And so the self of ourself, you could say, is the one that we actually forget, as well as the small self of our habits and conditioning. We give that self into what we meet and what we do. If we become completely absorbed in it, then paradoxically, we disappear. Our self-consciousness disappears. And the whole thing operates. It comes pouring through. We become the thing that we become the engagement itself. One of the things at this stage, according to Daido, is that we begin to see that there's no distinction between ordinary beings and Buddhas. That true self begins to appear in the guise of the people that we meet. That Buddha itself is how we are. And it's not that we have to make a radical change anywhere, but just to be completely and thoroughly who this is and what this is. Coming and going, coming and going. So that's the fourth one. He said the danger in this one is that we begin to feel really connected and opening up, and then we become inflated and think about my own insight and how cool it is and how great it is. I don't think we have to worry about that, because life usually sets us straight pretty quick. It's hard to stay inflated for long and not meet some sharp object somewhere in our world. So what do you think? Is this animal disappearing in the mist, or are we where is this animal? What is it doing? Yeah.
I'm thinking about the 10 steps also in terms of the Four Noble Truths. If you incorrectly look at the Four Noble Truths as steps, maybe of recognition, and seeing that your life is suffering, and then understanding well, why, which is the second one, mm-hmm. is the grasping and the repelling. And then, oh, there's a way, there's another way. There's mm-hmm. something that I'm not seeing, and then there's a way, and I would contend that there's a hidden one that says let all that go.
Yeah.
Right. So here, though, and if you look at the picture, well, he's still holding, he's still got the rope connected to the ox, as he does in the next one.
Yes.
So I still feel that in terms of the mappings of the Four Noble Truths, we're still in number two. We're still in their suffering. He still wants to make the ox do, he wants his mind to do what he wants it to do.
Yes, he calls it wandering here. The ox is still wandering. Yeah, it tends to take off. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the mind, you mean how the mind is...
Something to be still manipulated.
Is, yeah, yeah. Because it's on automatic, in a way. It's the automatic that creates the suffering. The greed and anger and ignorance are very, very profoundly ingrained in our bodies. So, it's not easy that we do have to rein them in. And we do rein them in. We aren't liable to tear people that we don't like limb from limb. I mean, if we're so-called civilized people. So on that mm-hmm. level, certainly, yeah. Yeah. Yes, it is nowhere. It is. There's no goal. There's nothing to attain.
The more you said, the more you want to get better or do this, and you come back to the same spot.
On Wednesday night last week, I was talking about, among other things, about my regrets. And somebody said to me, "Do you still have regrets?" Well, yes, actually. Even Zen teachers have regrets. Of course.
But do you feel that you've gotten somewhere where you haven't been before?
It feels like returning home to me. It's not going somewhere else. It's coming back.
So you've been there before?
apparently. It's hard to talk about in terms of time because it doesn't happen in terms of time. It just happens in each moment. And it's how we are in each moment. So in a sense, there is a kind of progression, but it's sometimes they say like a string of pearls. There's no end to it. And no beginning either. So it's more about clarity than it's not something else. It's more like being cooked down, you know, to make a richer sauce or something. It's the same sauce. And it's one mistake after another. Nothing is promised. Koban always said, nothing is promised. Which means we're free. We're free not to grasp and try to get somewhere. Somebody asked me about contentment. How can we be content? And I learned at Chikoji the only way to be content is just to put all your effort into whatever you're doing and be perfectly willing for it to fail at the same time. To kiss it goodbye at the same moment that you're doing everything in your power to make it happen. So that there's nothing extra about it. In what you're doing. It's just the thing itself. It's hard to do. It's hard even to notice how we hold on in that way. How secretly we really are invested in the outcome. But it works a whole lot better if there's no investment in the outcome. It actually functions more completely. It's like jumping off a cliff. You know, you just have to hold your nose and jump. Because the truth is, we aren't nearly as powerful as we think we are, and we're not really doing it in a way. That's why it's extra. Well, it's like our zazen itself. You know, we say, you know, I'm coming and I'm sitting and I'm doing my sitting. But we're being done. We're being sat. We're being brought at the same time. So we can't, you know, check out and just be automatic about it because we have intention. But our intention, we don't really know where it comes from. And we enact and are enacted at the same time. In everything that we do, actually. So we can say, I did this painting of the tulips. But if you've ever tried that, you realize that whatever comes out on the paper is like magic. You really don't know where it came from. Or if you write something, if you write a poem, it's like a gift that comes from somewhere. You wonder where it came from. Look at this. So it's ours and it's not ours at the same time. And our inflation comes when we think it's all me. You know, I did this. Look, Mommy. And truth comes to us when we can realize how little we actually have to say about it. With all the best and complete intention. We have great power and none at all.